This is Sign Language with Bruce Williams and Doc Goldstein.
Hi, and welcome to episode 168 of Sign Language. This podcast is a bit of a strange beast. We were going to kill the podcast off. We've decided now that we won't quite be that hasty just yet. What started out as a casual conversation that was not going to be part of the podcast morphed into what we wanted to be in the podcast. As a result, I didn't record a proper intro to it, and Doc wasn't recording right from the beginning. So for the first bit, you're going to get a little bit of Doc on Skype, and then it'll cut across to when he started recording. So with that said, I'll cut over to what we recorded earlier.
So I'm back to my SM57.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Because I remember we had one listener, our only listener, who mentioned that he liked that, so
right.
He liked it better. Yeah. And I just figured, well, he doesn't want an accurate representation of my voice, and I can't say as I blame him for that. So I kind of purposely didn't get anything ready intentional to discuss, because I thought we'd just try something different and just see what happens, because
sure,
clearly whatever we're doing is not gaining us any listeners.
I'm
pretty good, but nobody seems to give a shit.
Apparently not. I've been thinking about this a lot, and the only thing that I can think of is that over the lifespan of this podcast, it's been through a couple of, you know, changes of face, if you like, in that, you know, it started out as an offshoot from building the pod, the first podcast that I did, which was all about how to use Adobe Audition. And what happened over the life of that particular podcast was that I started to get listeners emailing me, asking me questions about things that were more general in nature and not necessarily specific just to Adobe Audition. Things like, you know, how do I choose a microphone? How do I use a microphone effectively? And, you know, how do I use compressors? And how should I use EQ? And all that sort of stuff. And it was because of that that I decided to split it off and create Sign Language as a podcast about more general audio specifics. And, you know, that conversation grew and grew and grew. And you came on board in your anonymous role, and the other listeners contributed stuff, and it got to a point where I felt like I'd sort of lost control of the conversation, and I didn't really have any experience to contribute in the areas in which the conversation was going. And that was why I initially killed it off, and because I felt like I was just an adjudicator on essentially a time-delayed Q&A. And in hindsight, that was probably not the smartest thing to do, because I had, you know, lots of listeners at that point. In the process of putting the podcast to sleep, most of those listeners unsubscribed.
And so then,
you know, a couple of years down the track, when I, you know, came to the realization that, hey, I really miss talking about audio, and I resurrected the podcast. I resurrected it to a much smaller listener base because most of the people had left. And, you know, I then tried to, you know, get it up and running again, and then sort of ran out of steam with that. And it was around about that time that I thought, you know, maybe this would work a whole lot better if I had someone to bounce off, like I do with Shutters Inc. And so that's when I reached out to you. Yeah, you know, or you sort of touched base right at a really good time when I was looking for someone to have join me as a co-host. And yeah, so I'm kind of thinking, you know, is it just that it's been through too many relaunches that, you know,
we need to change the name and start over? Maybe maybe everybody who was on Sign Language has gone away, and maybe you need to start a different podcast.
Well, Kath suggested that maybe that's what it needed, you know.
Or some way of just making it known, because all the people that you used to have on there, maybe they just don't tune into it anymore because they don't realize that there's something there to tune into.
Well, that's a possibility. And it may also be that, you know, those people who did listen to it feel like we're just covering old ground again, you know, because we, you know, and that was, I guess, my call that when you came on board, I said, well, let's go right back to square one and we'll start from scratch. Maybe certain listeners have felt like, well, I don't need to hear all this again because I've already heard it once and I've already got my head around it. So I don't know.
Maybe my focus is too narrow to just recording. There's a lot to do with audio other than just recording as well. You know, and I think that your original premise was wider than that, you know, anything to do with audio, especially, and you talked more about consumer audio as well. And, you know, there's a lot more people who care about consumer audio than, you know, the 0.1% that care about how to record audio. So,
well, you see, in my mind, you know, in a perfect world, we'd be as narrow as you wanted it to be, you know, or as your experience, well, not that your experience is narrow, but, you know, I like the idea of talking about, you know, the process of recording and mixing and mastering and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I love that stuff. But maybe.
Well, do you have contact emails for the people who used to be listeners? Maybe you can send out a blast to everybody and say, hey, we're back.
I don't. I was never one for collecting personal data about the listeners, and maybe I should have been. So, you know, there are one or two Facebook groups that I'm on that are about audio, but I mean, I did promote the fact that that Sign Language was relaunching and that you were coming on board and that I was excited about that, and obviously that didn't count for a whole lot.
I won't take that personally.
No, no, no. I meant from my side, not from your side.
That's so funny. I'm willing to go in almost any direction. You know, it doesn't have to be as narrow as it was, or it can be as narrow as it was. It doesn't matter to me. I just don't know what to do to get more people to tune in, you know, because that's the focus, I think, right now.
Yeah, the thing that I found disappointing was having, you know, you and I have done 7 episodes prior to this where, you know, like I said, we went back to square one, we started from scratch, and, you know, we've covered a lot of that basic stuff, like, you know, microphone polar patterns and, you know, stereo miking, EQ, preamps, all that sort of stuff. And, I had a train of thought there and then I lost it.
Well, so maybe now it's time to get away from that beginning material, right? I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe. I don't know. Sorry, that's where I was going. We've done these 7 episodes, and, you know, throughout those 7 episodes, we constantly were asking for, you know, feedback from listeners as to whether they liked what we're doing or didn't like what we were doing, if there were other topics of conversation they wanted us to address. And we didn't get any email at all over 7 episodes, not a single email.
Right.
And then, you know, I went off on holiday to Europe, which was now 3 months ago. And in all of that time that this podcast has lain dormant, I've had precisely one interaction from a listener, and that was Chris Harris out of the UK, who said to he sent a message on Twitter and said, hey, Sign Language has gone a bit quiet. And I said, yeah, look, you know, this is where it's at, probably going to put it to sleep. And he came back and he said, well, that's a real shame. He said, you know, I love Doc's, you know, experience and his point of view, and, you know, and likewise what you, meaning me, has, you know, shared over the years. And I kind of felt like, wow, is there only one person paying attention anymore? I really feel like I thought there were more people. I mean, I can see from the stats, there's plenty of people downloading. When I say plenty, you know.
So they're downloading it, but they're not communicating back to us. Is that what you're
pretty
saying?
Pretty much, yeah. So there's about 100 people that are still listening to the podcast, or maybe their podcast catcher is downloading it, but they're not listening to it. I don't know. Yeah, maybe they just haven't unsubscribed. Oh. They're just getting the audio, but they're not actually listening.
Yeah, you know, there's a mastering podcast that I'm subscribed to, and I just delete it when it comes up.
Right.
some British guy.
Ian Shepherd.
I don't even remember his name.
Ian Shepherd, the mastering show?
Yeah.
I quite enjoy that. I listen to that as well. I sometimes take issue with some of the things that he says because I have a different point of view, but I think that's the beauty of any subjective art form, you know? And I
Oh, yeah. You know, I tell my students all the time, this is an art and a science.
Yeah, absolutely. And for that reason, anything that has any sort of artistic or creative element, I always have believed it's very subjective. There aren't no rights and wrongs. I mean, there are certainly principles that we go, well, that makes more sense to do that way than it does to do this way, but you know, it's still open to interpretation, you know, based on your experience and the end that you're trying to achieve. So to me, it's always been a very subjective conversation. So I'll listen to his podcast and I will sometimes go, yeah, don't necessarily agree with that, but that's fine, you know?
I used to really like the podcast that Big Al and that other guy did. Not Al Schmidt.
Big Al.
Al Wagner.
Yes.
That was a great podcast. I love that thing. Yeah, and then when they went dark, it was like, what a bummer. I especially liked when they started talking about Keith Richards snorting his dad, you know, and all this other stuff. It was just so damn funny.
Yeah, right.
Maybe what we ought to do is start recording and just talk about our quandary.
Mate, I've been recording all of this. So
okay, I've been recording for about, I don't know, 5 minutes or so.
That's fine. I'll make it work.
I just think that we enjoy doing the podcast.
Yeah.
We both do. And, you know, one of the reasons why I like to teach is because I never get tired of talking shop. You know, I know there are plenty of people who wish I'd just shut up about it, but, you know.
Well, the people that wish you would shut up can always unsubscribe.
That's right. Don't say that. It sounds like that's already happened.
Yeah.
So I guess since this is going to go out, our conversation, yeah, such as it is going to go out. I would just say to those of you who are listening and those who might actually give a shit, help us, you know, because we want to grow the podcast and we're not sure how to do it. And we really aren't sure about what your interests are. So we can talk about recording or not. We can widen the scope and talk about the best way to record a sound effect from a tsetse fly, you know, in some desert somewhere, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, Doc, I'd love to hear a war story, something from your past that is no longer, you know, having to be. I mean, obviously, you can keep the details, you know.
I'll tell you a couple of those. I'd
love to hear something that, you know, something that went, you know, awry that shouldn't have, or and how you dealt with that or something like that.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I've got, first of all, I am a practical joker.
Oh, are you?
Okay. Oh, yeah. But anyway, this first story. So I was at Wally Heide Recording, and this was in the late 70s.
Okay.
And Wally Heide Recording at that time was like the world's largest recording studio. I won't say we were as important as Abbey Road, but we had more rooms. So that's why we were the largest.
Right.
And all of our client base were big name clients. You know, we had, you know, the Stones were in there. We had, I think Floyd was in there.
Wow.
We had Alan Price in there. And to me, that was a big deal because I knew that he was the original keyboard player from the Animals. And to me, that was like having the Animals in there. I remember playing pool with Elton John's guitar player, you know, that tall blonde guy.
Okay.
Really nice guy.
Right.
He kicked my butt at pool. I was never a good pool player. But I'll tell you, I was there, and I wore two hats when I was there. I was mainly a tech.
Okay.
So I had to know, you know, what a burning resistor smelled like and how to find it, you know.
Yep.
But I also did a session on occasion. But my story is about the very first time, well, let me back up. Before my employment at Waller Hardy Recording, I was in smaller studios and didn't deal with so much big names. It was just local bands and stuff.
Right.
Right. So here I end up at Wally Heider's, and I did that by knocking on doors relentlessly. Yep. But anyway, so my first time I get called in because the session had gone south with a big name client in there. That's the story I'll tell. So I get this. I'm up in the shop in the Ivar building, which is now the BMG building, I believe. It's right on the corner of Ibar and Sunset.
Okay.
It's a, you know, it's about a 10 or 15 story building. Anyway, I'm on the second floor in the engineering shop. I got this call that mixing room C is down. So in this building, we had like three locations, not counting San Francisco, just in this local area in Hollywood. We had three buildings, and one of them had three rooms, A, B, and C. And C was the smallest room, but it still had a big Neve in it. And we were using all Ampex MM1200 tape machines everywhere.
Yep.
And so it was your typical late 70s vibe, you know. So I get this call. You know, I'm a newly hired maintenance engineer, tech kind of guy. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. I get this call. We can't get any sound out of the console. We need your help. Get down there now. So we had this central stairway in the building, and I could go down there like a fireman. You know, I could take two or three steps and go down, hit the first floor in that amount of time by swinging around the pole.
Yeah.
So I get down there, and I walk into the control room, and here's the disappointing part. I don't remember who the client was.
Okay.
Because I was scared shitless. Okay. Because I didn't act like it, because I'm really good at acting cool, yeah, you know, when I need to.
Yeah.
Because you certainly don't ever want to see a client know that, you know, you're sweating.
Oh, no. No.
Never let them see you sweat, no. Right? So I go into the control room, and there's probably 10 or 15 people in there, and they're all gathered around the console, and they can't get any sound out of it. So I look around, and there's no sound, and I go to the control room monitor knob, and I make sure that it's, you know, turned up a little bit, not all the way, because I don't want it all of a sudden to die when the sound comes back.
Yeah.
And I look at the switching that is feeding that knob, because, you know, it can play back either the console output, which is what they were looking for, or could have been set to play back on a tape machine or something like that, and that machine might not have been rolling, and they wouldn't hear that.
Yep.
Finally, I noticed that down at the end of the console, there was a solo button push.
That'll do it.
Okay, now, I have to tell you, for those of you who don't know, and for those who do, you're already laughing, but for those who don't know, a solo button enables an engineer or someone, anybody, somebody off the street, to just hit solo on any channel of this massive mixing console, and it'll mute every other channel except that one, and you can hear what that one is doing. So if you're trying to find where the squeak is coming from, and you think it's on the kick drum, you can solo the kick channel and see if you have a squeak there. Or, you know, if you've got distortion or some kind of weird noise, you can solo around until you find it. That's the whole point.
Yep.
Okay, but the technology was different then. In those days, if you push a solo button, it would light a little light bulb above the solo button.
Yeah.
Not an LED, a light bulb.
Oh.
A light bulb that can burn out. And the solo button was this round black button.
Yeah, right.
Now, most mixing consoles and even workstations like the Pro Tools rig I'm sitting in front of and the Reaper that you're sitting in front
of. Yeah.
Most of those nowadays, if you have any channel in solo, you get a master solo indication. So you can click on that and unsolo, or it just tells you that there's a solo somewhere and you go looking for it, however you want to treat that.
Yeah.
Back then, this console didn't have that.
Yeah, right.
This console had no LED or light on the meter bridge below the mix bus that was lit when any solo was pushed. So, of course, it couldn't hear anything because they had a channel that had nothing going to it soloed and a burned out light, so they couldn't tell it was soloed because they had the lights down in the room. And that's the kind
of thing you would have only seen that because you were looking down the length of the console. If you were sitting right in front of that button, it would have been very easy to miss the fact that it was depressed.
Well, somebody probably hit it with their elbow.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
Or, you know, so I looked at that and I said, you know, I really hope that's the problem.
Yeah.
I really hope that it's the problem because who knows, maybe I released the solo and it still wouldn't work, but I released the solo and sound came back and everybody patted me on the back, you know, and I'm glad I could help, you know, and I walked out with my, you know, with my chest high, but inside, you know, it was like, you know, panic. You know, I was feeling a little bit better, but I don't remember who the client was, except for that they were a really big name.
Right.
Now, at that time, in the studio right across the hall, Kenny Loggins was recording an album that ended up being called Keep the Fire.
Right.
So it could have been overdubs on that album that they were doing in this room. I don't know. It wouldn't have been unusual for a client to do more than one thing at the same time in different rooms.
For sure.
I can't really say that it was that record because I just don't remember. But
yeah.
I will tell you another funny story. I don't think it's as funny, but back then there was a record by Supertramp called Crime of the Century.
Oh, great album.
It's a landmark album.
Yeah.
The mix and recording is so good on it, it's frightening.
Yeah.
And that was done by, and his name just left my mind, but you know, from Abbey Road.
Okay.
Oh, he's got a book out that I've got two copies of. And anyway, I can't bring that up right now. But anyway, we had a mastering lab up on the fourth floor of the building that was actually not owned by us. There was a guy up there named Stan Ricker. Mm-hmm. Who got real famous doing half-speed mastering. So
right.
Those who don't know, you know, when you master for vinyl, which is what there was back then, you have to be careful that you're not too loud or you don't have too much bass on one or the other sides because you don't want the stylus to break into the next, you know, the next spiral and you know, all that. You have to, you know, kind of have to, there's a lot of special stuff you have to go through, right?
Yeah.
So what he did was he would master with the record playing or with the tape playing at half speed so he could get a little more in there
yeah.
without it going crazy. And it'd be easier on the cutter head and all this stuff.
So just before you carry on there, was the idea of that, like, so let's say your quarter inch master was recorded at 15 IPS, so you're playing it in at 7.5 IPS instead of 15.
Yeah.
That means that your low frequency stuff is playing even lower, but your high end stuff is playing at a lower frequency as well. So was the intention to get more top end onto the vinyl or onto the lacquer? Was that the intention or?
I think the intention was to get better fidelity and a louder signal without damaging the grooves.
Right.
And I got to tell you that he did a lot of custom work, or he had somebody do a lot of custom work on the electronics because all the EQ would be different in both the playback machine and in the lathe, which I think it was a Neumann lathe, but don't quote
that
me.
That makes sense that you would need to change the EQ curve because everything's shifted. Yeah.
And I think it was probably experimental, so it probably wasn't NAB or AES, which would be the typical 15 and 30 IPS curves. So,
or IEC, wasn't that
Right. So, but anyway, the interesting thing was is that he cut us a half-speed lacquer, a one-off of Crime of the Century.
Oh, wow.
So there's actually a point to where I'm headed with this.
Okay.
Believe it or not. And that sounded so good. I just can't tell you how good it sounded. We ended up, and nobody knew this, but we ended up using that record to check room EQ in the mixing control rooms.
Wow.
Of the studio.
Wow.
You know, we would EQ the room the normal way, which I didn't do back then because I wasn't one of the tech gods of the place. I was just a tech that was recently hired.
Right.
But they would tune the room, but then at the end when they were done doing that, and these were URIE monitors that were using 604s, and they had the little URIE blue horns on them and all that.
Okay.
And that's what they had in all the rooms, and they were spring-loaded, so they didn't bounce and all this stuff. And powered by Yamaha natural sound power amps, really great-sounding amps, but I'm digressing again. Anyway, when we would put Crime of the Century up on this special turntable we had, after we tuned the room, we'd tweak it a little bit if it needed so the Crime of the Century sounded right. And we recorded all our big names on these monitors that were finally tweaked using Crime of the Century as a reference.
Wow. That's a big call.
Yeah. Wasn't my idea. But I thought it was okay because, you know, those monitors were interesting. But 604s, they were good speakers, but they also had little issues. You know, no speaker is perfect, right?
Okay.
So it makes sense that you would put up a mix that you believe in.
Yeah.
After you've gone through the technical part and just make sure that there wasn't something going on that was really odd.
Sure.
So I actually think that was a conservative approach, but at the time I thought it was nuts.
Right.
But in hindsight, you know, and that was in the late 70s, and now I'm 107 years old, and I parked my Conestoga wagon out front now. So now with hindsight, it actually makes sense to use a reference recording that you like and that you trust.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, Crime of the Century sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
It's a great, great mix. So that's two stories so far.
Nice. Nice.
I think the funnier one is the first one.
Yeah, that's great. That's absolutely great. All right. Well, look, we won't kill this just yet. We'll wait and see if we get any feedback from this episode.
Yeah, short episode, I can tell.
Definitely.
But this is us reaching out. We're reaching out to all you people out there that listen to us. Please tell us what we don't do that you wish we did do.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it's not your laundry, yeah. You know, it's all good.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, Doc loves talking shop. I certainly love talking shop. We'd love to have a reason to keep doing this, but it's a bit pointless if we're the only two people listening to it. So, yeah.
Well, I enjoy hearing your voice once in a while. It's all right.
Likewise, mate. Thank you. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week, and I guess we'll...
And let's hope we get some response.
Yeah,
let's
definitely. Get some response. I will do my best to make some noise on Twitter and on Facebook and everywhere I can in the groups that I'm active in and try and get people at least motivated enough to just, even if it's just writing a 10-word email to say, hey, yeah, I'm still here and I'm still listening.
You know? Well, whatever you send out, make sure you send it to me because I'll make sure everybody at the college gets it.
For sure.
Because I am teaching recording engineering at Fullerton College here in Fullerton.
Yep.
Which is where I'm coming from right now, not far from where the Fender factory used to be, right?
I was actually thinking about you through the week. You had those fires were pretty close to you.
Yes. One of my friends who's a teacher, it kind of came up close to his backyard.
Yeah, right.
It went away, you know, so he got lucky.
Yeah, I was looking at the news and saw Anaheim Hills, and I'm thinking, geez, that's got to be close to Doc. And when I went and looked on Google Maps, I was wow, yeah, that is close.
Oh, yeah, you could walk outside and the sky was dark.
Yeah,
there's
right.
No question about
wow.
it. You know, and we had actually had a fire that was closer. About 2 years ago, there was a fire that came right up to the park behind us, and
wow.
that was even worse because the next block over got evacuated, and we almost did. Whoa. So there's another question for all your listeners. If you had to get evacuated, what would you pack first?
Yeah, microphones.
Well, I can tell you what I packed. I packed my Martin guitar, and it's an HD35.
Yep.
And a lot of paperwork.
Right. You know. Fair enough.
Yeah, and the cat.
Yes, of course, of course.
But, you know, that really makes you wonder, like, oh, my God, what should I take?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So, okay.
All right, Doc. Well,
let's
hope
we get some response.
Yeah, good to chat again.
Always.
And we'll chat again in a couple of weeks, I guess.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, mate. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Sign Language. Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@signlanguagepodcast.com.